Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 5 of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Jesus valued unity and prayed for it. We believe unity begins with Jesus-centered relationships, gathering around a table, sharing a cup of coffee or a meal. We like to say unity begins with a cup of coffee. So grab a cup and let's get started with another episode of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast.
I think of 1 Corinthians 13, now we see dimly, darkly as in a mirror, then we'll see face to face. So throughout my whole life, until I see God face to face, my vision is limited. It's not that I don't have vision or don't have faith or it's not real. No, it is. And yet I recognize with humility, a term in epistemology, fallibilism. So the very founder of this movement I just referred to called Receptum of Ecumenism, his own epistemology, Paul Murray, stressed this dimension of fallibilism, that we humans are fallible. I don't have a God's eye view. Yes, God is self-revealed in Jesus Christ, but that doesn't mean now I am God and know all things about all people, places, traditions, history, faith, etc. And that keeps us open and humble and learning, even from those who may be different from us, who are Jesus followers.
Hello and welcome to the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. This is Drew Baker, and today I am here with Chris Miller, and we're going to be talking about spiritual direction. Chris Miller joined the faculty of the College of Bible and Ministry in 2015 at Lipscomb, serving as an assistant professor of theology and director of Lipscomb's Institute for Christian Spirituality. In addition to serving as a spiritual director, Chris has been training other spiritual directors since 2010. He has taught systematic theology for Fuller Theological Seminary. Chris holds a BA in Biblical Studies, an MDiv, and an MA in History and Theology, all from ACU, and a PhD in Systematic Theology from Durham University, and that is the Durham in the UK, not the one just down the road from me in North Carolina. In addition to teaching spiritual direction, he currently teaches courses on human flourishing, spiritual formation, and the history of Christian spirituality. He freely draws from the breadth of the 2,000-year-old Christian tradition, Orthodox, Catholic, and Protestant, as he joyfully pursues his calling, flourishing in union with the triune God and helping others do the same. So welcome, Chris.
It's great to be here, Drew. Glad to be with you.
Glad you're here. I've gotten to know you through the program, going through the spiritual direction training, and gotten to know you and your family a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Sure. I'm married to Marisol, and I have four children, and they are one boy and three girls, and they are 28, 26, 24, and 21, three of them about to have birthdays in November.
Awesome. Wow. And two of them currently attend Lipscomb, is that correct?
One is here.
One is here. Right. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, starting off this conversation, just tell me how you first got introduced to spiritual direction. I assume you weren't born knowing about spiritual direction. So when and what were your first impressions?
I was in ministry in northern Indiana. And just to continue growing, I drove down the road to a little seminary called Associated Mennonite Biblical Seminary. And I was just taking classes just to keep growing and learning for fun, actually. And in one of the classes on spirituality or family spirituality or something, I heard the teacher, Marlene Kropp, talk about this thing called spiritual direction. So I grew up in Churches of Christ. I had not heard of this. And I was being exposed to various different ideas here. And I thought, well, what is that? And she described it to me, you know, well, it's different than mentoring. It's different than counseling. It's one person accompanying another on their spiritual journey. And it kept coming up in the classes, and the students and the teacher seemed enthusiastic about it. And I thought, I'll give it a try. And now get this, the founder and former president of that Mennonite seminary, Erland Waltner, was retired. He was in his 80s. So there I was in my late 20s, 27, really the front end of my adult life, my life in ministry. And he, you know, I'll say nearing the end of his, in his early 80s. And so I met him and we began to meet once a month, which is typical. And the 20-minute drive to meet with him was preparatory. And then afterwards, I would usually end up going to the library for like 30 minutes just to write because of all that just happened in that conversation. Seriously, Drew, after he would ask a question or make an observation, sometimes it felt to me like the floor would just drop a foot. Like it was truly world-changing for my little 20-year-old self and actually helped me leave a difficult season much more peacefully near the end of those 3 years that I was privileged for him to be my director. And then went on from there, and I can tell you that story if it's appropriate, but that's how I was introduced.
Well, do tell.
Well, you know, so later working for another group of churches, I was working in a national office, and we were beginning to do pastoral care for pastors. And so we were putting together ideas for retreats and intensives, long, you know, 9-10 day. We were brainstorming what sort of follow-up was needed. And so we were brainstorming about the various types of counseling or pastoral care or other kinds of engagement. And I thought, oh, definitely want spiritual direction to be a part of that mix along with other kind of caring and helping professions. And so the year after we started that in 2004, I said, oh, I myself need to go get trained. And the group of churches, the denominational office paid for it. And so I flew up to that same seminary in Elkhart, Indiana, and began to be trained myself as a spiritual director and have never looked back. I just loved the ministry and began doing it for pastors 10 days at a time, and then would follow up throughout the year offering them direction. But, you know, 10 days on a retreat, doing most afternoons, most all afternoon, one direction appointment after the other, that's one way to learn it. Mm-hmm. And then went home and began offering it as a form of pastoral care, one thing of pastoral care that I offered at the church I worked at.
Yeah, so you've mentioned a couple of varieties of pastoral care. There's, you know, pastoral counseling. There's then you've got, you know, the licensed counseling, marriage and family therapy. You've got life coaches. How is spiritual direction different from those things?
Yeah, great question to ask. So two words for me really capture what spiritual direction is, just if I'm trying to say it short. One is co-discernment. So I'm not telling you, if you were my directee, Drew, here's how God is present or active in your life, but I'm serving you. So it's a service. It's an authority under. So I'm helping you explore and notice. You're the key interpreter of your life and your life with God. And yet it's not an individualistic thing. There's community, and I'm one representative in that community helping you do that. So, and the other word is accompaniment, which is, you know, again, it's more like a living journal. So another person, which sort of pierces through the isolation and the individualism rampant in our day and in our spirituality and our particular culture and time. And I think it really helps with that. Now, to distinguish that from counseling, I would say counseling can be past present oriented, often undoing knots, how we've been formed, our relationship patterns, our emotional patterns, even trauma, to help us better cope, to live more healthily in the present. Spiritual direction is more present-oriented. What is happening in this relationship? So if counseling is problem-centered, I would say spiritual direction is presence-centered. Similarly, coaching, life coaching in the various forms, in the various contexts, business, education, etc., coaching helps us move forward, and I love that too. It's just so different. Helps us move forward in areas and ways of life to implement practices and our goals and action steps to the life that we're trying to cultivate and create. And there's soft accountability to move forward. So if coaching is future and present oriented, again, spiritual direction is going to be more present and relationship oriented, whereas coaching would be more goals and action oriented.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a very good, concise differentiation there. You mentioned a couple times, questions, observations, you know, when you're receiving mm-hmm. spiritual direction, it was his questions and observations, that really impacted you. Tell us a little bit, what does that look like? Because if we're trying to be aware of what God's doing in my life, it's like, okay, why not just let me do that by myself? Why do I need a director? If we're doing direction, what does the director provide in that relationship? And what do you mean by questions and observations?
Yeah, absolutely. Great, great question. Well, I'm going to use a $10 term that really is the backbone of my vision of life and ministry, one of them. And it comes from the belief in God who is self-revealed in Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. That is Trinity. And the $10 phrase is called relational ontology. Ontology meaning what is real. And what is most real is in relationship. So is relationships. So from the moment I'm born, I am born into relationship, or even conceived for that matter, and all the way into eternity. So from the smallest particles, the quarks that spin in relationship to the largest galaxies, every human, every object, every dimension of reality is relational. And those relationships, strangely, truly, mysteriously, are as real and as powerful as the objects or humans that are in those relationships. Mm. So learning to pay attention to the power of those relationships, you know, it's how we live, move, and have our being. We are in relationship with God. So learning to pay attention to that, engage that. That's why I'll tell students and my friend and colleague and who retired recently, Dr. John Mark Hicks, taught me well when he said, you know, I don't have much confidence in me and God changing, just me and God. And I absolutely agree in my years of pastoral care and in my own life, because that's not how we're designed. I have a ton of confidence about God and me and a few other people, because as soon as I'm honest out loud, as soon as I articulate my heart and watch this in relationship, then I got a load of confidence about things actually changing and moving. It's why counseling works. It's why coaching works. And hence why spiritual direction is a good pastoral ministry. I just gave you Ecclesiology 101. It's like, why the church? Why not just us all follow Jesus on our own and not bother with the messiness of church? But this is how life is, how we are formed. From love, in love, and to love, the triune God, we are formed and called. And I see spiritual direction as one way of helping tease that out, help us notice that. And questions and observations to me are like the scalpels, the tools, the garden tools of spiritual direction. They're the pastoral means to help us really observe and notice and dig into our experiences of God, or even our beliefs about God, or our responses to God, which honestly, if we don't stop and notice and articulate to another human, we will often run right by them and not notice. Other practices like journaling or silence, silent retreats, solitude can help turn up the volume on our internal life, what's going on. Well, spiritual direction is another practice, a relational, all of them relational, but a practice with another relation with another human. And those questions and those observations really tease out and pull out of us, as one author puts it, helps us put our soul into speech.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Put your soul into speech. We in one of our classes in the past year, we talked about different metaphors used for spiritual direction. And one of them, and I can't remember if this was from a book or one of the other classmates, but it's like, we go through life as like we're running through a forest and a spiritual director helps you notice a particular tree, you know? And that just reminded me of taking walks with my son, Jude. And when he was real little, we'd be walking along and I'd be more like, all right, you know, we got this far to go and this is the way to, and he would just stop and he'd look down and he'd find some tiny little rock that is just fascinating. And right? It's a totally different experience when you have somebody with you saying, ooh, look at that. and pointing things out. And I've had that experience in spiritual direction as well, when people notice things that I'm like, oh, ooh, that you're right. I don't know why I act that way, behave that way, or think that way. And that's going to make me need to do some work and really get to the bottom of this. So.
Exactly. And a story, a quick one. I just, a student in another class, in a spiritual formation class, where I invite them into various spiritual practices. And one is, hey, try out spiritual direction 3 or 4 times in this semester. He spoke about, as I was saying it aloud, and this is a common experience, it's just fresh on my memory. He said, as I was saying it aloud, the spiritual director paused, something about in his relationship with God. And he said, tell me about the image of God behind that behavior. And he said, I just melted in my seat and realized, I don't really believe that about God. Why is it that I'm responding to God in that way? Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes our hearts, our bodies believe certain things, and a person will just gently, and there's an example of a good direction question. Tell me about the image of God behind that behavior or behind that thought or that statement, where you begin to explore and turn over the rock or the tree right in front of you. And you go, well, what do you know? Looky there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we have so many beliefs about God. And that's, you know, you have experience with spiritual, I know, with systematic theology. And that's something that I think relates, is a lot of times we have beliefs that don't actually fit with other beliefs we have about God. And it just helps us to really think, now, is that really who I believe God to be? Does that really fit with what's revealed in Scripture and through my experience and through Christian tradition? And, but yeah, spiritual director can help us, like, wait, why do I act as though God is this way towards me when I know he's so much better than that and so much more beautiful?
You know, Drew, if you think of your favorite metaphor, let me throw one other in that I think will help shape our thought and imagination beyond just sort of dictionary definitions of what direction is. Having a passenger, a co-passenger in your car with you, you're driving your car alive. And do you know how helpful it is? Well, when we want it.
Yeah.
that's a key part. To have someone to help you navigate, or to notice landmarks around you, and to even have perhaps a map pulled out, you know, and beyond just Siri telling you when to turn right or left. It is so helpful to have someone co-discern or accompany you to notice what's going on around you and your responses. I find that very valuable.
Yeah, I definitely see the value in that metaphor, but I'm just thinking, my daughter is she's got her permit, and she has become very observant about things that I do when I'm driving that may not be strictly, you know, encouraged by the Department of Transportation, but she notices, and
exactly,
that's less pleasant. But yeah, I've had other experiences where, like, you know, you're supposed to turn right here. Oh yeah. That's a helpful metaphor.
Drew, I would say also too, so this is individually, but I'm also thinking of your unity work, and I want to follow where the question's going to go. You know, so I teach a doctor of ministry course called Spiritual Companionship at Lipscomb, and I'm actually with those students this weekend and teaching it next spring again. And it's a part of our doctor of ministry which concerns missional formation. And you think, well, how in the world, you know, how does that apply? Well, as we learn to be discerning people, and as we learn to discern the very Spirit of God who's at work in this world and in our lives and corporately in our churches, as well as in our own hearts and lives, individually and community of individuals connected, then we learn to pay attention to the presence, activity, and movement of grace or God's Spirit in our lives. And thus we can learn to respond and cooperate. Or one of my favorite theological words in this realm is participate, to join and share in what who God is and what God is doing in the world through Christ and by the Spirit.
Yeah.
It certainly has implications for concerns for unity.
Yeah. Participating in the divine nature. So yeah, you mentioned how in spiritual direction, you're paying attention to the movement of the spirit. You're really just trying to observe what God is doing and how to participate in that. Tell us a little bit about this. There's a lot of times some confusion around the term spiritual director.
Right.
What's that confusion about?
Right. So it's been called different things, and I've stuck with the term just because it's got history, and it you know, various books and articles still call it that. Some groups have called it soul friend. Our Doctor of Mystery class here at Lipscomb calls it spiritual companionship, which has some history, which sort of pushes against this hierarchical, authoritarian, implicit view that might be embedded in that term, spiritual direction. But as you dig in and you find out the practice, the experience of it, the literature, as I briefly mentioned earlier, it's not authority over. Mm-hmm. Never is a director telling you, at least in faithful, good spiritual direction, in my view, here's what God is saying or doing. Here's what you need to do, where it can become hierarchical or controlling. Actually, quite the opposite. Often if I talk with my hands, I would put one hand below the other and I will say, here is your role, you know, as I'm forming and training directors, to say you are serving another as they discern, as they explore, as they question. So it's in community, it's with others. But you know, questions, observations, noticing. Are there times for more direct statements that might be more challenging? Well, for sure. And yet it's always from a posture of humility and service. One final thing I'll add on that, just the term epistemology is the study of how we know things. And so I would say there's epistemological humility. There's a humility of service to say, hey, look, I'm not in your skin. I'm not living your life. There's one step here below, beneath, in service to what you're doing from a foot washing perspective to say, you know, I'm noticing this. It sounds like, so you'll hear phrases like that. It sounds to me like you might be frustrated with, or I notice these questions that you're having, or I even notice your facial expression. And so there's a reflective observation and question dimension to it, but it's always from a place of humility and service.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that too. And it's not teaching. that's right. Something that, you know, people who teach, it's kind of hard to put that aside, but
that's,
I really
right,
like that. Cause you're really being able to be hospitable and open and receiving the person as they are. You're not going into that saying, okay, I need to make sure that they, you know, learn this or change in this way. You're underneath them. You're serving them. It's unidirectional. And that's one of the things that, you know, the director is 100% focused on the other person. It's not a mutual time, but it is not a hierarchical, but it is unidirectional is what I'm hearing.
You know, and a phrase that folks will use in writing and just directors I hear, they'll often say the phrase, I want to hold space for that person, or I want to hold this space well. And really, and I love your phrase, hospitality, it is a spiritual conversational hospitality, holding space for the other and what's going on in their lived experienced relationship with God, and to maintain that conversational hospitality to explore it together. So it's a much slower conversation than I'm talking today. I know I'm talking enthusiastically, and we both are, and energetically, but it's a much more prayerful, slower, exploratory, deep conversation.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about who should be considering spiritual direction. What kind of place should people be in where spiritual direction would be most beneficial for them,
I should think. Yeah, good question. Two different kind of answers. One is, if we were to draw a continuum from sort of no faith all the way up to the most mature faith, and somewhere early along the way, there's an experience of conversion, you know, at whatever age, you know, teen years to late in life. And So conversion, and then there's sort of basic like formation in the faith, basic discipleship. What are some of the basic biblical truths and of Christian faith? You know, what are some of the basics of following Jesus? I would say spiritual direction is not ideal for that moment in time, because the needs in that time really are teaching and getting grounded. But I would say the rest of your life after that, because you're exploring, not ideas. And here's the thing, in conservative traditions where we take the Bible quite seriously in our spirituality, one of the temptations or the missteps that we can fall into is thinking that knowing the Bible equals relationship with God.
Yeah.
Or spirituality equals just knowing biblical facts. And yet, one of my favorite verses along this line is John 5:39-40, where Jesus criticizes the Pharisees and he says, hey, you diligently study the scriptures because you think that by them you have eternal life, but these scriptures are talking about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. In other words, the scriptures are witnessing to this lived reality, this lived relationship with Christ, with the Trinity, and, you know, the scriptures, when they do their job well, the inspired scriptures is pointing us and helping us hear and live in this actual experienced live relationship. So who or when, as we go about exploring in our life, when we hit hard times, when we hit trials, when we begin to feel like we're burning out, or watch this, when some of our images of God or views of God or spirituality, and we actually can sometimes even feel like we're going agnostic or even atheist, saying, I'm just not believing this or that, and we feel like our spirituality is crashing, that's a great time too. Because like an old wineskin, sometimes we outgrow previous views of God or ourselves or our lives. So if you're noticing some significant shifts, the tectonic plates in your life are sort of moving underneath you, and here's a good sensor. If you're sensing movement in your image of God or image of yourself or life itself, then that can be a good time to explore. But it doesn't necessarily need to be a crisis time or, you know, a sort of an earth-moving, earth-shattering kind of moment. It's just for ongoing growth and noticing and enjoyment of the relationship. Now, one last thing I'll say on that direction is, actually, I think it kind of works well, and the church is yet to tap, some have, the power of this for those who who think they have no faith or have no explicit faith in Christ or even have other kinds of faith, because I find even with deeper conversations I'm privileged to get involved in with those in that perspective, it becomes a beautiful way to help them explore and notice and even pay attention to their what's going on, because I believe God has a relationship with them, drawing them to himself and even helping them notice those experiences and wonderings and questions and frustrations. So yeah, I think it can be a great ministry, you know, sort of missionally, you know, not just for Christian as well, that invites people into that hospitable space and conversation. But mostly maturing followers of Jesus, maturing Christians looking to grow, whether in crisis or not.
Yeah, you don't have to be a giant of faith, but to have already been prepared to know what kind of God we're expecting to encounter.
Yeah.
Important. And this is explicitly Christian spiritual direction. One thing I've discovered talking about spiritual direction to other people, if they're not Christians, they think it's some kind of witchcraft or some kind of, like, what are you talking about? And like, no, this is explicitly Christian. We are trying to connect with a triune God that is revealed through scripture, and that's our guiding relationship. So
I've had a couple of students along the way from more conservative backgrounds, and they come in and say, you know, like, what's this witchcraft, you know, and they were teasing, of course, but yet it was still coming from a place of concern, just not knowing what it is. And, you know, one framework, if you look into the history of it, it really is just a focused type of pastoral care. you know, you can look at where the questions of Jesus and his responses, and it really fits that kind of paradigm. And you've got letter writing and focus kinds of pastoral conversations throughout the 2,000 years of Christian history. So, yeah, I like to call it a focus kind of pastoral care.
Yeah. And it's listening.
A lot of listening.
That's one thing that I've begun to grow in, is just being a better listener. And, man, so many, I mean, that's one of the, I think, primary needs of our culture right now, is to have somebody that really listens to them.
Yes.
So many people are wanting to hear their own voice and only listen so that they can figure out what they're going to say next. And, but to have somebody be 100% focused on you and wanting to know what you want to say is so rare. And spiritual direction is such a gift, to people who feel unheard, overlooked, ignored. So yeah.
Amen. And what, if I may turn it to you, how would you name, what's been one of the primary gifts for you as you have discovered this ministry?
Well, yeah. As far as my personal growth, I think that learning to listen better has been one of my greatest, experiences, that I've learned that, or I've noticed in my life that when I engage other people in conversations, I'm much more likely to ask follow-up questions, like, tell me more about that, and rather than just skipping on to the next thing. And I think that just makes me a better human being. And also just having somebody notice what's going on in my life. And I haven't had any major epiphanies, but I think it's just shaping me to be more observant, more attentive, and just more in step with the Spirit, I guess.
Love that. Yeah, I think those are frequent fruits and gifts from this ministry.
Yeah. Let's shift this towards kind of what you're doing now. You're training spiritual directors. You're working with the ICS. Tell me first a little bit about the Institute for Christian Spirituality and what it does.
Sure. Several years ago, our previous president at Lipscomb began inviting and initiating different institutes at the university. And at that time, 15 plus years ago, the institutes, you know, Institutes of Law and Justice, Institute of Conflict Management, the Institute for Christian Spirituality in this case, were to take the goods of the college, the goods of the university, and serve the community, give it away, bless others. And at the time, folks around here, there were conferences called the Zoe Conferences, and they were doing things to nurture the spirituality and growth, and it often involved the contemplative dimension, but, you know, other dimensions of Christian spirituality as well. Well, that continued. I joined the faculty in 2015, so a little over 10 years ago. And our mission is simply that, to nurture the Christian spirituality, particularly of leaders, but all people. And I would say Middle Tennessee and beyond, but the truth is folks come in from different parts of the United States, either on Zoom, and we offer courses and retreats on a handful of themes. We just did one recently, a retreat on rest, sleep, rest, nourishment, and activity as worship, you know, so sort of our self-stewardship. So, you know, that was an example of a retreat with my friend Dave Nixon. On the other hand, we do courses. So my friend and colleague, Dr. Lance Belay, is doing a four-week online group coming up, just introducing those who want to know about Thomas Burton. The good, the bad, the ugly. No, just, you know, all the things that, how Thomas Merton was used in the 20th century to an influential person as we think about Christian life, Christian spirituality today, and the strengths as well as limits there. And so that's a course. And then one of the main things we do, where I've encountered you and had the privilege of getting to know you, is our program, and the way I like to say it, is the program of formation and training in spiritual direction. So I myself have appreciated and been ecumenical, have grown from lots of different church traditions, and yet stay tethered to a local church community, and yet growing from the broad, some writers call the great tradition. And so in our training as spiritual directors, we attempt to pay attention to some of the gifts from the various streams as we train others in spiritual direction. Obviously, we're a Protestant and a more conservative Protestant group, and folks come from all different kinds of traditions. Of course, there is a constituency from Restoration Movement churches, and we're happy for them to be a part for it. And there's a like-mindedness and a heartedness there as they come in, and we enjoy that. And I was at a gathering for spiritual directors recently, and sitting around my table just a week or two ago, no joke, it was an Eastern Orthodox, a Roman Catholic, a Lutheran, a Vineyard person, a Church of Christ person, and I loved it. It was great. I said, this is some rich conversation.
Wow. Yeah, that's the kind of eschatological vision of, you know, everybody together sitting around a table and just paying attention to God and serving one another in love. And man, that's beautiful. Just thinking
about...
Let me put
my finger there, because I want to tie it to what you're doing here with Common Grounds. What I found, as people pay attention to their experiences of God, there's a fascination and a joy in the other, both the similarity and the dissimilarity. Mm-hmm. So the Lutheran in the room, the Eastern Orthodox in the room, it's like, oh, please tell me what that's like, right? And so doctrines become ways of exploring and understanding. And so there's sort of this receptive hospitality, this, as I know you'll explore and have explored, receptive ecumenism, but particularly as we look at our lived relationship with God. And so our doctrines become what I think they're meant to be, in service. You know, I'll put it to you this way, as I say in lectures. Life is greater symbol, greater than my words about life. Drew, greater symbol than my thoughts or my words about Drew. Well, how much more is God greater than my thoughts or words about God? So as one theologian, T.F. Torrance, puts it, he says, he uses the term from physics, calls them open concepts. They open us up to the greater reality of God. Well, this has implications for unity, as you can hear, right? And there's a great measure of unity as we lean into, yes, engaging different beliefs and thoughts and theologies, but yet also space to begin our lived experience with God and some of the challenges and mystery of what all of that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that openness and excitement around mystery of like, and that's where that epistemological humility or comes into play, is like, just as when you recognize that you don't have the whole picture and you don't know everything, you get more curious about the other person and what they understand and how they can reveal something new about who God is that you may not have ever considered before. And it turns these encounters with other people as opportunities for exploration and growth rather than, you know, opportunities for conflict and, you know, trying to debate and stuff like that. It's just much more beautiful.
Exactly. And I think of 1 Corinthians 13, now we see dimly, darkly, as in a mirror, then we'll see face to face. So throughout my whole life, until I see God face to face, my vision is limited. It's not that I don't have vision or don't have faith or it's not real. No, it is. And yet I recognize with humility, a term in epistemology, fallibilism. Mm-hmm. So the very founder of this movement I just referred to called Receptum of Ecumenism, his own epistemology, Paul Murray, stressed this dimension of fallibilism, that we humans are fallible. I don't have a God's eye view. Yes, God is self-revealed in Jesus Christ, but that doesn't mean now I am God and know all things about all people, places, traditions, history, faith, etc. Mm-hmm. And that keeps us open and humble and learning, even from those who may be different from us, who are Jesus followers.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, as we kind of bring this conversation to a close, just want to help our listeners with some practical things. If one of our listeners is looking for how to receive spiritual direction, where would you recommend they go to look?
Yeah. Well, I used to run a nonprofit that had a long list of, but I closed that down to focus on my work here at Lipscomb. So what I'm going to say is we don't have a particular page that lists spiritual directors. There are a couple of organizations that do that. I'll just name a few. One is now called Grafted Life Ministries, and it used to be called Evangelical Spiritual Directors of America. But if you Google that, you can find them, and they will have lists of another group, friends of mine at Sustainable Faith, and they have a webpage. They not only do training, but they also list various spiritual directors. So there's two. But honestly, if you go to various seminaries or, you know, retreat houses today in your local area, you're probably going to find some people who are trained in spiritual direction. And if you email some of the organizations or institutes that do the training, they'll easily recommend, you know, people. So there, you know, relational is going to be the top criteria. And just like finding a good coach or a counselor, there needs to be a relational fit. And so there's something in the field called an exploratory conversation. Mm-hmm. So if you email, you can just say, hey, love to have an exploratory conversation and get to know you a little bit and consider spiritual direction with you.
Yeah. I looked on a local listing. Is the Methodist Church had a listing. And I was trying to find somebody local. And the first person I encountered through that is not a good fit.
Right.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. It's you know, you try it out, see if that works. And then if not, then try somebody else and see if that's a good fit. But yeah, that director was doing a lot more teaching than what I was wanting to experience and learn from. So, yeah, just...
And some trainings will emphasize that. Some traditions, I'll just say it neutrally. Some traditions will emphasize the teaching element more.
Yeah.
And I will say, I long, because one of the key questions is, what is its relationship to the church? And some of the elders and ministers and pastors that have taken this, I love it because I do see it as a shepherding function. And so while there are organizations beyond the church that are supporting this right now, I think it has its roots and it's most at home as a part of the pastoral function within the church. So there's my invitation to all pastoral people out there to learn this skill and their gift of pastoring, whether you're an elder, a minister, a pastor, a shepherd, or exercise pastoral gifts in your local church.
Which is a perfect segue to people who feel like this might be something they want to get trained in so that they can offer this. How would they go about that?
Lipscomb.edu/ICS will take you to our training program, and there are videos and descriptions about year one and year two and what it's about. And we're not the only game in town. You know, there are other good quality training organizations that have proliferated over the last few decades. It's been around in Catholic and Orthodox circles for centuries. Protestants have woken up to it in the last 40, 50 years, more conservative Protestants in the last 15 to 20. And you can go to their websites. Because some groups and people are sort of doing their own startups that are not, connected with a long-term seminary, university, monastic community, I would say look for those that have some stable, strong reputation that would support and enable ongoing growth and critique as a part of something. And this is all by trust. I mean, that's how it works. It's people. So, you know, where are the networks and the places and people and organizations that you have a measure of trust with and for?
Good deal. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, just thankful for who you are, Drew, and what you do, your sensitivity to God, your leadership, and this important dimension of Jesus's desire and work by the Spirit for unity, for community, as we look forward and long and have foretaste of that now. So just appreciate you and the work that you're doing here.
So thank you again for being here in this episode. Thank you to Chris Miller. Again, he is with Lipscomb at the Institute for Christian Spirituality. We at Common Grounds Unity have a vision to create and support gatherings of unity-minded Christians around the globe. We want you to imagine the good news of these gatherings that model the prayer of Jesus in our divided world. Please help us with comments and suggestions by emailing me at drew@commongroundsunity.org or john@commongroundsunity.org. If you're benefiting from this ministry, then we ask you to consider making a monthly donation to support our work, and you can do that by going to www.commongroundsunity.org/donate. Thanks so much. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Common Grounds Unity podcast. Please check out commongroundsunity.org to learn about who we are and to find gatherings in your area. You can also subscribe to our monthly digital newsletter, join the Facebook group, or find our YouTube channel. Until next time, God bless, and remember, unity starts with a cup of coffee.